Everyone's summer good? Football's back?
Yeah.
Fill up a Love Island and all that nonsense. Get back to the real goodness.
Was you watching it?
I've never seen it in my life. I'm not gonna lie, I've never seen Love Island in my entire life.
I didn't watch Love Island, but I know everything that happened.
Same.
And my girlfriend, my wife didn't watch it. Yeah. Oh, wow. Just on Instagram. Every time I go on Instagram, everything that happens on Love Island is just all over my timeline.
Yeah, I'm the same. I've never seen it. It's like almost like a badge of honor now that I've got that I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
I'm kind of half tempted to watch it, but I'm like, I've come so far.
Yeah.
I'm like, I kind of take pride in the fact that I've not watched it yet.
Someone said that to me about Game of Thrones.
Never seen that either.
Yeah.
I've never seen Game of Thrones.
Someone said exactly the same thing to me. Like they got to the point where they just basically said, I'm not going to watch it.
I'm the only one on the planet.
No. I'm with you, Joe.
I haven't seen it either.
And the funny thing is, now that everyone was disappointed with the ending, I feel vindicated. Okay. Yeah, screw you guys. Wasted 7 years of your life.
I made my missus watch the final season, and she has not forgiven me.
Oh, man.
She was like, you wasted my life, Josh.
So Rich, good summer. Because you know, I say not much football on. There was a lot of football actually, but there's obviously no Premier League on. What's
Sorry, Jordan. I'm just sorting out my headphones here.
Are you all right now, Rich?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay,
let's do this.
Yes, how was your summer?
It's good. It's good. It's summer's still here, right?
what little left there is of it.
Yeah.
Hang on.
My headphones keep. Sorry. Yo.
Are you good? Check.
Yeah, that's it.
Can I have a little bit more on mine?
Check.
Yep. I've got none now. That's better. That's much better. So Josh, you just very briefly, you had an interesting summer as well, didn't you?
Well, what happened to my... Oh yeah, I got married, yeah.
You did? Congratulations.
Oh, really? Congratulations, bro.
Last weekend.
Oh, right.
Well, technically I'm not married yet. Had the kind of Nigerian traditional engagement.
Oh, okay.
And I get married at the end of this month.
How'd you get so much time in the WhatsApp group for your marriage?
Well, you know,
you've been active. You have been active.
You just gotta have your home life patterned up, innit?
I hear that. It's gonna get home, his wife's gonna be like, I heard you.
You know what, right? There was one time he was on the pod and she came back and she was like, oh, you was good on the pod the other day. And I was like, what? She was like, yeah, sometimes I listen to it to check what you're saying. I was like, oh my days. She's not even like football. What are you doing?
Just checking up on you. And on that note, welcome back to this, the first Football Fans podcast of the brand new season. I'm very, very, very excited about this because back end of last season, I was kind of longing for a bit of a break. You know, you get through a long season and Arsenal were rubbish. So I just kind of wanted a little break. So I was like, yeah, can't wait for a little downtime. But I'm not going to lie, I have missed the Premier League. I have missed the FFP. So it's really good to be back. What's happening, people out there? This is the Football Fans Podcast. Unlike many other podcasts, we took a break, as mentioned, for the summer. So hopefully you've missed us as much as we've missed you. I'm looking forward to hearing our voices again. I'm Jordan. This is the first time you'll be hearing us. And if you're a seasoned listener, welcome back. If it's the first time, welcome one and all. Now, let's get into all the good stuff. Well, forget the good stuff. Let's get to the important stuff. If you're not subscribed to the podcast, this is your first time, click it right now. Because without even listening to the whole show, I can guarantee you'll like it. So just click it right now. There'll be some small changes to the podcast this year. One of which will be there'll be no more drive-bys. So we're scrapping the drive-bys this season. We're going to have a much more flexible, conversational, experimental style on the podcast this season. We want to hear from you guys out there as well. So you guys listening, let us know what you want to talk about and suggestions, and let us know who you think's talking shit on the podcast this season.
Is that why you took away the drive-by?
Let's move on, yeah. Much more interaction from you guys out there. The voices you might have heard earlier on, we have regular Chelsea fan Gabriel. Gabriel, what are you saying?
I'm good, man. Had a great summer, like you said, for what was worth of it. And yeah, looking forward to the season, you know, 3 points next week, Sunday. So
this
is going to be good. Early.
Bang, bang. Wow, okay. Well, I think it's only right we give our next guest, regular United fan, Josh, a chance to reply to that. Josh, what are you saying?
I'm actually doing well. Like, I'm looking forward to the season. Well, yeah, I got married like not long ago. Life's good. Enjoying. Yeah. Good summer. Football's starting. We're going to beat Chelsea, so that's cool. But I can't say much for the rest of the season. Well, I know we're getting 3 points against Chelsea, though.
Okay, so you're confident. G's confident. Someone's obviously gonna get. Look
just ask G what colour the moon is.
Oh wow. Okay. Okay, bad to be brought up. Ouch! 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 Fair enough. Let's move on. And our third and final guest is a first timer. We have Mr. Richard Clegg here. He's a FIFA and FA registered player intermediary. Works across the continents, across the world. I've got here Sweden, Iran, Middle East, China, Hong Kong, working with professional players in the UK as well, from the Premier League down to grassroots. Rich, welcome. How you doing?
Welcome. Hi.
You good?
Good to be here, yeah. Jordan, you finally got me here.
I finally got you on. 4 years in and we got That's you right. on. We got you on.
Rich, do you have a team or is that not allowed?
I support Arsenal, actually. So I was just saying earlier, yeah. So, yeah. Like the Real Madrid loan. I think that's a smart move.
What loan is that?
The Danny Sibilis.
Oh, yeah, of course.
You're
yeah,
I'm afraid you don't. I'm guessed.
No, sorry. We've actually made some good ones. Them ones old back in the day. They're unlike We've been active, so that's old news. So we've got you on, Rich, because we're gonna start off by talking about agents and transfers and the role that agents play in transfers and that whole process.
Sure.
We will get to in the second half of the show talking a little bit about the top six, and we'll kind of have a more generic talk amongst the three of us, going through Premier League business. But I'm always interested to kind of hear from the agent's perspective of what it's like, why things don't happen, why things take long, why some don't take long. And I know that we've been talking over the summer, me, Gabriel and Josh, amongst other people as well, about transfers and deals.
Sure.
So I've just got a few questions, and the guys will I'm sure kind of interest and throw a few questions at you as well as we go along. My first question to you, Rich, is as an agent, what is the hardest thing about getting a deal done? What's the one thing that proves to be every deal that's the thing that you don't miss the most?
Do you know, Jordan, that's a really hard question to answer, because every deal is not the same, and there's risks in every deal that takes place, or not even a deal. There's so much process before an actually deal comes to fruition. Mm. So, you know, it could be various stuff. It could be from the player doesn't want to go there. His characteristics that he doesn't want to go out of his sort of his home sort of territory.
His comfort zone.
Yeah, he's got family, friends. Some players have better characters that they can go abroad and they can suck it up and just live in a hotel or a apartment for seasons and not worry about it. You've got situations that could happen with the family. You've got situations with the culture of the club. You know, it's such a difficult.
There isn't one thing. No, that every deal.
No, that's right. It, you know, and when you see on TV where the deal's done, you know, it's it can be some situations where things can go simple, and then it can be situations like the Wolf of Wall Street. You know, so it's ongoing crazy talks when to get the deal done. I'd say one of the other things, if you've got a player that's well respected and in demand, then you know the game's so international now that you know if a player for instance isn't represented by one agent, for instance, he might be asking a pool of agents to come with an offer for him. So for instance, you know, in one situation I was talking to a player, but he's got agents from Russia talking to him, he's got agents from yeah, exactly. So you know, and so it can get competitive out there, and the world's smaller now with the internet as well. So even going rewind 10 years ago, you could be quite clever and find out about players that everyone wasn't aware of, but now it's like everyone knows everyone. Mm-hmm. It's nearly impossible not to know. You know, there'd be a 14-15-year-old somewhere in South America and they'll come on the radar and then everyone knows about him. So the competition is fierce from an early stage now with the internet. So
okay.
I don't know if that's answered your question.
Well, basically the answer is there isn't one thing that makes it difficult for
that's everybody. Right.
It's,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
Different elements. I'm keen to know about timings of deals as well. Mm. Why some deals can be done, some big deals can be done in a week.
Sure.
I would use Man City as an example of a team that they seem to, the process of the bid, the contract, and then the revealing of the player is in a week. And
sure.
Teams like our team, Arsenal, that that could just be a whole summer in just getting the bid in, and even then the player doesn't come in.
Or United, it doesn't happen.
Or yeah.
Sure.
Oh, save some bullets, man. Is there a reason, or what is the main reason why some deals can take literally 3-4 months or an entire summer to get done?
Yeah, sure. So, for instance, clubs, the head, the directors, all the scouts, could have been looking at a player from there's 14 years old at another club. They could have been tracking him all the way up to sort of the age of 18 or 21, 22. I said I can't really give specifics, but I had a director of a club call me the other day asking about how a certain player was getting on, even knowing that that player had signed a 3-year contract somewhere else. They're keen to sort of keep track on certain players that they know that potentially could fit what they're trying to do. So, for instance, in those scenarios, you know, they're looking for that intelligence, that data. So something could, you know, could be on the boil for sort of 12, 24 months, knowing that that player's going to run down his contract at a certain club and then he's definitely going to go onto the next club, or could transfer, for instance, whatever. But then you have other scenarios as well where, you know, like in any business, you've got to transfer, you know, with a deadline. In any work that you do, you've got a deadline, right? You're under pressure. So, you know, there's deals that can get done in a day, you know, where you'll have backup deals where there's a certain player that they want and he's gone to another club. They'll have a backup player they're looking at. They come through, you know, so that's I don't know if I'm answering the question, but that's how things can happen really quickly and smoothly. And other times it can feel like, wow, how did that happen?
Yeah.
I was going to say, because you mentioned about tracking a player. And I guess there's tracking them and there's tapping up in inverted commas. How the clubs kind of maintain that boundary between keeping an eye, tab on a player and not like almost offer him a pre-contract where he's almost like pretty much signed and they've gone along with the ethics of the game?
Of course, there's boundaries there of tapping. So tapping up a player is actually offering a player a contract. But, you know, it's about terminology. You know, someone can find out how's Jeff getting on, you know, so areas like that as well. I mean, again, with the internet, you've got WeScout now as well, stuff like that, where you can pretty much see any player, any time, all their game stats, you know, the position in play, everything like that. So they can actually monitor players without actually being close to them in that side. I think clubs like to get to know the agents, they get to know the family, the player, because they need to not just know that the technical skill ability of the player, they need to know the mindset of the player as well. It's important as well. With certain clubs now, you know, football is getting more sophisticated, you know, they want the mindset of players that can fit into the culture of the club.
But how do you do that? How does an agent or how does a club? Because I remember hearing Arsenal saying this like years ago, you know, the player's mentality is just as important as the talent. But how do you, on meeting a player, you've got your stats and you know that player is, you know, really good at scoring goals or saving, whatever. So that's tangible. You can see this guy can score goals. How does the club or the manager ascertain that player's character in that day, week that he's trialling him or meeting him?
Well, that's a good question. That's where, you know, maybe you do some background. You know, clubs, if they're smart, they'll do background, they'll speak to people that work at the previous club or areas like that. Obviously, you know, if you've got last minute deals, it's hard to do that and you have to take a risk. There's always a risk with players, right? So I think it's calculated risks. So, for instance, yeah, if you're looking at a player over a longer time, you can speak to the agent, get familiar with the agent. Maybe you can speak to the family, the club. You can get some history, some other players that used to play with that player as well. You can get a lot from sort of ex-players or players at different clubs and get a feel for what that player's like, their character. And, you know, football is quite small as well. So you can, you know, you hear stories about people or people are willing to tell you sort of information, areas like that. So,
Josh, at your club, just today announced, was confirmed that you've got Maguire in the door.
Yeah.
That has been literally the entire summer to get that deal done. As a United fan, what has been the biggest frustration about that deal for you?
in terms of that, how the deal was done? Because my biggest frustration is that we signed
hold that thought,
yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Was it working before or not?
It was definitely working. Yeah. Yeah.
Could you hear me initially?
Yeah, we could hear you before. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm worrying about. Is it does seem like it's just stopped working.
Can we swap it with the one next door?
No, because Will's in there, but I'll probably take this off the desk and maybe reassign it. Let's just have a listen through that and find out what bit.
I think my last two questions would have come through, but they might have picked up.
I can hear something from that now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's working.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
That's weird. Why did that? Brand new studio, you'd hope it would work. We can just retake that question then.
Yeah.
The easiest way to do it, we'll just take it back and do the edit.
Yeah. Okay. You good?
Yes,
Ronnie. So Joshua, today was confirmed that Harry Maguire is a Man United player.
Yeah,
I know to your frustration, that he's now in the red wearing the number 5. Isn't that Rio's shirt as well?
Yeah.
I'll try to hold it back.
Gee, it's going to be a long season. Just save a few. It's going to be a long season. No one's plenty of time. That deal's taken like months and months and months.
Yeah.
As a United fan, what's been the biggest frustration for you?
In terms of the timing?
Yeah, about why that deal was taken so long.
Well, you have to bring it back to last summer. If I'm going to go speak about Maguire, I'm going to bring it back to last summer. We didn't want to pay the transfer fee, which was £65 million last summer.
Mm.
We've paid £15 million more this summer. And I'll swing back, I want to ask Rich a question, but like in terms of the timing, it's like, I think it's well known that United were wanting to sign Maguire before the summer started, or maybe there were a few other targets. Koulibaly was mentioned, De Ligt was mentioned. But if, at what point that they decided that they were definitely going to buy him, for me, if Leicester wanted 90 million, they saved 10 million, but wasted the whole summer, and didn't really focus on their other targets, other positions. Mm. That's what's frustrating to me, because if that's the case, that they dragged it on that long just because to save £10 million, I don't think it was worth it. He hasn't had a pre-season, so it's not worth it. So again, we've wasted a year in getting him in last season, spent more money, and then wasted even more the whole summer. He hasn't had a pre-season, and then ended up paying...
Well, he has, just not with you guys.
No, but that's... Exactly. He hasn't had a pre-season with us, so he doesn't, like... Starting him against Chelsea, he hasn't played with Lindelof, he hasn't played with De Gea, he hasn't played with Wan-Bissaka and Shaw. That's what's straight into me, because...
To be fair, they never look like they've played with each other.
Relax.
I've got lots here, man. Save some for me, innit?
Because I don't think they'll have a problem playing against Tammy Abraham anyway. So, let's just relax. But in terms of like...
Anyway.
In terms of what like intrigued me about the whole situation was... Like, and maybe it's a question for Rich as well, like, when stories come out about these are kind of the targets that clubs are looking for, how does that, like, because another one is, like, Bruno Fernandes.
Mm.
So there's lots of talk about Bruno Fernandes to United coming out of Portugal, coming out of different places, and it seems like United are denying that they're even interested in the player. So how do those things come about? Is it agents trying to kind of, like, raise the market for the player? Is it clubs... basically trying to sell the player so they put fake stories out? Like, do you have any inkling into how those kind of things happen?
I think, you know, the newspapers and media outlets, they've got a business to run as well. So they need the stories to come. They've got their sources as well. You know, they can leverage off, if they've seen a report in another paper or another channel, they can use that and leverage off of that.
Mm.
It does come from various sources. It could be from the club, could be from the agent, it could be from the player.
Yeah.
It could be from the player's family. It could just be someone that's close to any of those and gets really excited and just wants to be part of it and starts feeding some stories. So it's, you know, it's various stuff again that can take place. You know, for instance, talking about a player like that, I don't know the ins and outs, but knowing that he's not going to United, but whoever's involved, say for instance that player, it's always going to be of an advantage to them to be associated with United. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly other clubs are like, or other people started puts the perception of that player on their radar, and might not sign him, but they'll actually might take a bit more notice of that player.
Is that what do you think happened with De Ligt this summer? Because it seemed, one minute he was going to Paris, then he was going to United, then he was going to Juventus, then he was going to, there was another top club I think he was linked to as well.
PSG.
Yeah. How savvy now are agents in terms of knowing how to get the maximum amount of money for their client? Because that seemed to be an example of someone that knew, if I link all these big clubs and interest all these big clubs with my player, eventually the market's gonna go up, and then we're all gonna wheeze, and me and my client are gonna make money. How savvy are our agents nowadays?
I think like, you know, agents are there. In whatever scenario, they're part of the team, the player's team, or they could be the club's team. You know, an agent can work for a player, can work for a club, or can work for both. It just really depends. The main aim is to get as many offers on the table as possible, and then leverage off of each offer. You know, and any, you know, if you're, say for instance, if you're working for a player, that's your objective. You want to maximize their opportunities, and we talk financially. However, it doesn't just have to be financially. Obviously this plays a big part, but there's always around, you know, what's their career future, areas like that as well. So you want to get as many options on the table as possible, and then leverage off of each one and see how far, you know, you can push it, sort of auction within reason. But you've got to know your intelligence again as well. You've got to really know how much a club's got budget wise, how much they're willing to go to, how much their other players are being paid. All of those, it's obvious at the top end, City and them, you know, everyone's reading what they're getting and stuff like that. But, you know, I think people forget that you've still got, you know, mid-table Premier League, bottom table Premier League, Championship, even to, you know, say sort of going down the leagues. But you need to understand fully what that club's, you know, capable of. Also, the people you're dealing with at that club as well, what's their motivations? You know, are they willing to go that extra mile for that player? So there's a lot of intricacies. Yeah, that's the word. Yeah, that go along with it. And you know, there's some fantastic agents out there that are just savvy about that stuff, doing behind the scenes research and everything that they need to know to make sure that they can really get the best out of a player, really. And sometimes, to be fair, let's be honest, sometimes there's only one deal that comes in on the table. Do you know what I mean? And sometimes there's no deal that comes in on the table. Let's be honest about it. So, you know, so it's just, you have to, that's what I'm saying, you have to take each deal and each player or scenario as it comes. And, you know, so that's what makes it interesting as well.
Just let our listeners know, we're deliberately not going to talk about some of the high profile cases of players this season, your Bales and your Zahas and your Pogbas. Two reasons. One, I just don't think it's fair to kind of put you in that position. And two, you won't know. You won't know the details of what's going on those players. So
it's confidential, yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of the people wondering why we're not kind of talking about specifics. That's kind of why. One more question, I can see G wants to ask something as well. But just from me, what about family members who become agents of players? How much of a positive to negative generally do you find that for players? Because obviously there's a personal self-interest in that person because it's my brother or it's my dad. But then is there a point where, you know, you're blinded by the love of your relative? He's still your brother.
Yeah.
But yet you're working in business now.
Well, definitely. There's a massive frustration within the agent community, especially, for instance, when I first became an agent, I had to sit a FIFA exam. It was pretty much like a lawyer's exam. It took me like a year to study to understand the whole FIFA rules, regulations, and then I had to sit an exam at Wembley Conference Centre, Wembley Stadium, actually, the Bobby Moore Suite. And it was, just to put it in perspective, there's 300 people that sat that exam that day, and only 7 people passed it. So there was previously quite a tough, rigorous exam that you had to pass to become a fully qualified agent, and once you pass, you felt that you'd really deserve, you know, earned that. But when you go into any scenario, not just in this country but worldwide, you could understand what the club's perspective is coming from, the financial areas around it, the whole legal matters, everything around it. Now, what's happened is FIFA a few years ago, I think it's 2015, they removed the FIFA removed the actual agent license, so you didn't have to sit an exam. So what happened then is you could essentially, as long as you're of good character, meaning you haven't had any criminal convictions for finance or violence, you could pay, was it, I think it's about £200-£500 a year to the FA, and you become a registered intermediary, player intermediary it's called now.
Okay.
So I would say there are some fantastic agents out there, and I think the frustration comes is that, you know, in certain situations there's people that haven't become professional and don't understand the regulations, and now they're becoming representing players. Mm-hmm. And I'll be honest, a lot of them are sort of messing up for the players. Obviously there's a few out there that are really good and they mm-hmm. understand it and they're quite savvy. I've met a lot of parents. The majority of parents, it's the first time with their son that they've been involved in football, so they don't know the ins and outs. But I'd say about 10% of the parents that I've met, you know, they've run other businesses or they do this and that. They're a bit more savvy. They understand what's going on, and you can speak to them and you can reason with them and you can understand and you can give them a perspective of what the club's thinking and what the club can do and what they can't do, and they understand. I think a lot of clubs do get a little frustrated when the person that's representing their player is not fully understanding the whole process and areas like that. But yeah, again, you know, I can understand as well why a family member would want to get involved with their son or their daughter, because one, they want to look after them, but two, you know, the financial rewards that could come into that family household, and you can understand that as well. I understand that. It's not, you know, but coming from a professional side of it, you know, there's a lot of frustrations around that.
Yeah. It's funny, my question really related to George's question, but I'll kind of expand on it and go a bit further. It might be difficult for you to answer. If you check, you can always tell me no.
Right.
But just thinking about, you know, the one thing you see in the media is, and you get it from on club side or even some player sides, agents always seem to be the fall guys. You know, when someone's not doing something right, you know, you look at kind of like the Pogba situation. Obviously, I'm not asking about specifically, but the Pogba, it's always his agent's done this, his agent's done that. I mean, how much influence can an agent actually have on an individual? And are you guys happy to be the fall guys as long as your clients are happy, or is it something that you become frustrated with?
I mean, take it with a pinch of salt. I see it as it's a bit like pantomime, like Wheel of Villains. You know, everyone wants to, you know, say that the agents are the villains. They're the ones that are the greed. You know, if the agents would be here.
I'm sure I remember hearing Yaya Toure's agent 2 years ago actually saying, I'm sure him saying something along the lines of, I'll be the bad guy if it gets my client the deal that we want.
Yeah.
So he was very open about just saying, look, you can say what you want about me, I don't care. Yeah. And I'll care about my client, sorry, and that's all that really matters. Is that kind of the general...
Yeah, if you're a good agent and you're in the team of the player, then you want to get the best you can for the player. So you're you obviously, you know, within reason, you know, we've all had situations where you've had to deal with someone that's really annoying or frustrating, or, you know, and it can get frustrating. I can understand from all sides, if, you know, they feel like they've lost out on a deal or they've paid over the odds, that, you know, and let's be honest, you know, the average people that are watching the media and stuff like that, they're not earning these sums of money. So it's for them, they can see that there's always already a bit of, like, you know, they're earning so much money, how dare they? And there's that as well, so you've got to play out. You know, but the thing is, again, is, you know, you don't really see, and I'll be honest, what you don't see in any of the media is when the clubs fall out of love with a player and the player's put to the sidelines and just left on the sidelines. You know, sometimes, like, the rejection's hard for some players, especially the young players. You know, it can be difficult. And sometimes agents, the only one there to, you know, maybe the family there put their arm around their shoulder, say, look, we'll try and make something happen, you know, stuff like that. So there's that side as well. You know, if a club wants you, they want you. If they don't, you could be dropped as well. Yeah. So, you know, what can I say, you know? But it's not to say there's, you know, I'm not going to pretend that saying there's not bad agents out there or agents that have, you know, made a scenario really difficult. You know, that you know, let's not pretend that that doesn't happen either, you know. So, but again, there's some shrewd people that work at the clubs as well. So,
yeah,
indeed. I'll bring you in, Josh. Percentage wise, how many agents right now are loving working with Man United? And I'm joking. But on the back of that question, there's a serious element to that question, though. Knowing, do agents kind of do their homework in terms of knowing that Arsenal are kind of known as a bit of a tight club, and United, in all seriousness, are a team that in the last few years, well, just have been overpaying for players. So do you, my agents deliberately lean towards certain group of clubs knowing that, you know, if we get a deal there, it's going to be big, or does it not work like that?
This is part of what you have to do. You're pitching to clubs. That's what you're doing, essentially. And sometimes you are pitching to clubs with your players. So, for instance, you know roughly what budget certain clubs will have. You know, it's pretty much common knowledge in the sense of, you know, the different. For instance, you know, say the bottom half or the bottom, say, 5 to 10 clubs of Premier League. You know, you could find a fantastic defender that's not been playing and he could be coming on loan. So, for instance, you know, what's their budget for a player like that? You know, max like 3 to 5 million maximum. You know, so you just kind of have to pitch the players the level that they're at to the club, as well as that, the salary matching as well. You can't there's no point going to a club and saying, hey, they want 500,000 a week when you know that their top players earning sort of 30 or 35,000 a week. Yeah. So you have to be realistic as well. You know, that's what clubs are looking for as well, because we talk about the scouting and stuff like that, which I talked about earlier, and a lot of the top clubs have that network globally. But then you get further down the league, and actually some of the clubs are not really set up like that, or they haven't got a sporting director. They're relying on good agents to come with the players that they need. So there is a service there as well. So if you can, you know, there's a lot of terrible agents out there that don't think about that, and they start pitching these players to clubs, and they're like, you just don't get who we are. But it's like any business, you know, you've got to understand.
Know the industry, know the market.
That's right. Yeah. So you go, look, here's a player. I know you're looking for a left back. Potentially this left back, you know, we could probably put an offer in for, say, 2 million. We could start at 2 million. This player, he wants, you know, if he comes here, I reckon 20,000 a week, sorry. You know, so you sort of start those conversations like that, what the economic conditions, so they get an understanding. The club will go away and start looking at the player, you know, do a bit more research, their due diligence as well. So, so that's sure. Another, you know, that's what a good agent is as well, that they've got a pool, they understand what the club needs or what their budgets are, you know, that, you know, otherwise everyone would be bidding for Neymar. You know?
On Championship Manager.
Yeah.
go on, Josh.
Sip yourself, Josh.
I think it may be quite similar related, but it's like, I guess with agents and clubs, like, do you find that some agents build a relationship with a club? Like, how does that work?
And totally, yeah.
Also, when you mentioned about the wages, like, because we were talking about bad agents, right? And I was thinking, well, like, if you're perceived to be a bad agent, like, how does that work within an industry? Do clubs just start saying, well, I'm not going to work with you because we don't like the way you kind of act? Or
the club might, or the FA might, you know, if you go onto the FA website, you'll see that some of the sanctions or agents that have been banned, you know, there's a list on there as well. So sometimes there's circulation out that goes out and saying, you can't work with this agent. Okay. So I've seen them in the past as well. So yeah, that can happen. But it's like any business that you're in, I'd say, is if you're an entrepreneur or you're starting a business, you want to have as many good relationships as possible. So it's about having that balance as well. So for instance, you know, you could do a deal with a club and you didn't really know that club before, but then you build that relationship, you can understand how they operate, you know, what they're looking for in players, but not just players. Then you can, you know, you could sign sponsorship deals. You could start looking for sponsorship deals for that club as well. You know, you get right involved with the club, and there's other opportunities there for you as an agent.
I know you got to go now, Rich. I'm gonna get you back in, because I wanted to talk to you about, like, pushy parents at, like, the young age. I wanted to talk to you about lower league. I'm hearing that agents in non-league now are kind of operating there as well. I'm hearing about that. But I'll just wrap up by asking you, we're going into deadline day, but by the time this poll comes out, it'll be a day before transfer deadline day. Just briefly, Is that a good day for agents in terms of it's good because you know that it's desperate buying and there's more money is going to get spent, or is it bad in the sense that deals are less likely to happen because it's left so late in the day?
I think speaking to a few agents at the moment, the general consensus at the moment, it's been quite a quiet transfer window.
Okay.
So they feel like there's going to be a lot more deals to be done. Again, as you've seen over the last sort of 15, 20 years of the Premier League, that, you know, it's there's so many more international players coming into the Premier League now as well. So that's, you know, there's still massive opportunities. So not all deals are going to get done. For instance, you know, on my phone here, I've probably got about 500 contacts with agents, scouts all around the world. So they're always feeding in players. So again, you know, you get onto deadline day, a player might sign another club. So that club needs to fill that position. So they're around, they're looking at their backups, they're contacting people. You can still throw pitch players into the club, still opportunities. So yeah, it's, you know, it's always, as I say, as an agent, you've got to be a deal maker. You've got to be out there. You've got to be hustling, looking for the opportunities. That's your aim, you know? So yes, yeah, until the time, you know, the clock stops, everyone's on it.
I love that. Yeah. Rich, cheers for coming on, man.
You're welcome.
It's very difficult getting agents to come and talk publicly about the industry.
Yeah.
I think for obvious reasons as well, but I appreciate your time here. Tell our listeners a little bit about where they can find you and where any kind of prospective young kids or players that might want to talk to you can find you.
If anyone wants to hit me up, it could be players, it could be young agents, or anyone that's also interested in marketing is at Richie Clegg. That's on my Instagram or Twitter, and my email's on there as well. So, you know, just
two G's,
Richie Clegg, yeah, with two G's. Yeah, okay. So yeah, just DM me, you know, I'm happy to answer any questions or help where I can.
Wicked. Cheers for your time, Rich. Nice one, boss. Thank you very much. Rich. Thank you. Okay, so let's bring in for the first time this season our Spanish football expert, Ben Hayward here. Ben, how you doing, sir?
I'm good, Jordan. How about you?
I'm very well, mate. Very well. How was your summer?
Yeah, really good, thanks. Really good. A couple of weeks in Portugal and yeah, now ready for the start of the new season.
You wasn't covering anything like the Nations League or anything like that, was you? Were you completely off for the summer?
Yeah, I was off. I followed all the international tournaments, and Portugal actually won the Nations League while I was there.
Okay, nice.
It's got big celebrations, yeah.
Nice. Okay, let's whiz through some Spanish stuff ahead of the season. Let's start with the biggest story that seems to be happening in Spain at the moment, and the big interest happening over here as well, Gareth Bale. And his situation at Real Madrid. Zidane seems to be coming off in a weird way as the bad guy here, because a lot of people are talking about how they think he's not dealt with this very, very well. We all know that he doesn't seem to be having him. A, how do you think this will play out? And B, do you agree that Zidane has played this, you know, he played this wrongly?
I think certainly Zidane is not coming out of this particularly well. Zidane is someone who we've watched over the years as a player and also as a manager, and someone who's very elegant. Also, the way he speaks, the way he deals with his players, his teammates in the past, and now his players as a manager. And I don't think he comes out of this one very well. I thought it was a bit, you know, petty. You know, the fact that Zidane didn't put Bale on the pitch in that last game of the season, which, you know, was supposedly going to be Bale's last game at Real Madrid, you know, throws him out. And I think it's because of the behaviour of Bale's agent. So I think what Zidane is doing is really trying to show Bale that, look, even if you stay, you're not part of my plans. And you know, sending him a strong message. And, you know, I think it's hurt his image. It's hurt the club's image. And, you know, as you say, he's come out of it badly. Depending on who you speak to here in Spain, you know, a lot of people kind of angry at Bale's agent for the way he's acted. And it's just a difficult situation all round, really. And as for how it will play out, I think at this point, you have to say that there's every chance that Gareth Bale will finish this month of August at Real Madrid. I mean, the Chinese transfer window has closed, so that's not happening anymore. Premier League clubs have kind of balked at the possible wages that they would have to pay. I just can't see it happening at this point. I think, you know, if I had to bet money on it, I'd say that he stays.
And he's obviously got a lot of credit in the bank, Zidane, not only because of his playing time there, but the three European Cups that he won there. And they, you know, I'm sure they had to almost beg him to come back. So he's in a very strong position in terms of being the manager at Madrid. But the pre-season's been really poor. This situation with Gareth Bale, you said yourself, he doesn't come out of it looking particularly well. You know, Madrid are known for pulling the trigger on managers there. Do you think he's got to do something fantastic this season, in the first half of the season, to not be fired between now and next summer?
Well, that's it, Jordan. You know, you talk about credit in the bank, but, this is Real Madrid. this is a club that, has sacked managers after winning the Champions League or after winning, La Liga. So, the fact that Zidane, it makes some difference. He was supposed to come back on his terms. If you look at the rebuilding project that they've undertaken this summer, how many first-choice players have they actually replaced? Spent a lot of money, and the issue's still there. Zidane needs a strong start, definitely, to the season, and it'll depend on trophies. I would be surprised if he were to go mid-season, but if something similar to what we saw last season were to happen, then, I imagine he won't last the season. That's just the way things are around Madrid.
And finally, on Madrid, has somebody taken out that small human inside of Eden Hazard? what's going on there?
Story, helping his Danny Drinkwater.
What the hell?
He returned to pre-season training. Yeah, depending on who you believe, some people saying 7 kilos overweight, which is. It's not great, when you've signed as the next Galactico and you turn up with all that kind of extra baggage. So let's see how it gets on before the season, if he can get in shape. Performances haven't been great either in pre-season, and that might be, of course, linked to his fitness. Fair. But we'll have to see.
Just quickly on Barcelona, their squad doesn't seem right to me. I know they've brought in Griezmann. And there's someone else I'm forgetting they've brought in as well this summer, quite significant. But their squad just doesn't look, something doesn't feel right about Barcelona to me. The Neymar thing doesn't seem to be happening because PSG wants straight cash. They're not entertaining this idea of money plus free players or some nonsense. How are they looking ahead of the season for you?
Well, actually, Jordan, I'd say they've had quite a strong summer, to be honest. They've signed Griezmann, who you mentioned. It remains to be seen exactly how he's going to fit in. But he can play in any of the front three positions, really. Play on the left, on the right, through the middle as a striker. So I think he gives them options. I think Frenkie de Jong, obviously, was
that's
signed
it.
In
sorry,
January.
Sorry, that's the guy I was talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, was signed, signed in January. So we all kind of forgot about a little bit. But, that move went through this summer. He was man of the match last night against Arsenal. I think he's probably the most exciting midfielder in Europe, to be honest. He's 22 years old, and he's going to add a bit more energy to that midfield that perhaps they were lacking last season at key times. Yesterday, they signed Junior Firpo, who is an under-21 Spanish international left-back. He's coming in to provide backup in competition to Jordi Alba. I think that's a solid signing. And, Neymar, do they really need Neymar? That's the question, isn't it? I know Messi just got injured today. He's out for a week or two. But when everyone's fit, I'm not sure that Neymar's really needed. I think, Barcelona strolled to La Liga last season. They won it comfortably. All right, disappointing end of the season in the Champions League. But they were so close, it was the semi-final second leg. They lost the cup final as well. I don't think there's too much wrong with Barcelona. And I think, given that Real Madrid and Atletico have undergone a rebuild this summer, then you have to say Barcelona are big favourites to win again.
You mentioned they've had a strong summer there. Just finally, Atletico Madrid, I think they've had a strong summer as well. How are they looking ahead of the season? They've made some good acquisitions, still got Simeone there. What can they do this year?
Yeah, I agree with you, Jordan. They haven't missed a bout, have they? I know they lost a lot of players with Griezmann leaving. Felipe Luis, Juan Fran, Godin and others. So they were kind of forced to go into the summer and bring in half a new team, let's be honest. And they've done that. I think Joao Felix a lot of money, 120 million euros for a teenager. But he's been absolutely fantastic in pre-season. And playing him behind Costa and Morata, which looks like is what Simeone is going to do, I think we're going to see a more attacking Atletico Madrid this season. So I'm very, very interested to see how they're going to play. And yeah, I think the signings all the way through the team, Llorente in midfield. Obviously, they've got the two new fullbacks as well, Trippier coming in from Spurs. I think they'll be good. I think they're in for a good season. And as things stand at this point, I think they're probably Barcelona's biggest challengers for La Liga.
I hear you. Ben, cheers for your time, man. Good to have you back on. Take care, man.
Take care, mate.
Cheers,
speak to you soon.
See you later. Bye. Ben Hayward there, our regular Spanish football expert. Right, let's bring it back to the UK, gentlemen. Let's start with you, G, because no transfers, although you've made, I think, two transfers in a weird way.
Yeah.
This summer. Chelsea, the season this year, how are you feeling about it? And put your bravado and your nonsense to one side and give me an honest answer. Give me an honest answer about how you think Chelsea would do this year and why.
That's it. In terms of predictions, I'm going to go top four.
Mm-hmm.
I think that whenever something happens at Chelsea, I have these debates all the time, I think there's always a catastrophe element that people always try to apply. So Hazard was leaving, we had a transfer ban, and everyone made a big hoo-ha about it. And I actually think, like, obviously, Hazard is a irreplaceable talent, and mm-hmm. there's no way that we're going to start a season without Hazard and think that we're better off as a first 11. But actually, as a squad, I think we've actually ended up with a more balanced squad and more players for each position from Bingham back.
can we get a zoom in on Josh?
Yeah. and Josh will feel the effect of that squad on Sunday.
I'm sorry, I'm just looking at you thinking he's delusional again. I'm sorry.
Bearing in mind this has been recorded and we can play this back in 6 months' time.
We have pretty much two players for every position.
But are they two good players for every position? That's the
yeah, they're not Hazards, obviously, but they're two good players for every position. Apart from up front, I'd say like we've got three average players.
Do you have two good left backs?
Yeah.
Who are your two good left backs?
Emerson and Alonso.
No, yeah. That's fine, but I'm talking last season. I think you had the same two players in
every position. But I guess this is the other point that I was going to get onto before Josh Rudy interrupted. Is that I don't, and this is not me saying Sarri is a bad manager. Sarri is clearly a good manager. He's gone on to another great job, but I think there was more to get out of the squad that we had last year by using the team in a more pragmatic way. So you get more out of Kante by using him in his correct position. You get more... I'd say you'd get more out of most players by changing the manager than you would have... I don't think any players in that dressing room is going to think, oh, I miss playing Sarri ball. So I think the improvements can come from that. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to sit here and say that we're going to beat Liverpool and City. There's clearly a clear gap between them. Rest of you clowns, I think we're winning there.
Can I just clarify something? That I think we just need to make sure we highlight what G's saying here. He's basically saying that Lampard is going to be a better manager for you than Sarri.
In this particular position, yes, because...
All right. I'm just making sure I'm hearing that correctly.
Because Sarri can't adapt. Sarri refuses to adapt.
But the one thing he did do, the one way he does know of playing, brought you a trophy and top three.
No, because if you look at the Europa League run, we didn't play anyone good. Your run was much better, was much more difficult than ours.
Yeah.
The first, and anyway, in terms of the getting to the Carabao Cup final and in the games that we won, like we beat Man City at home, he scrapped Sarri ball for the one game and just went direct.
True, that is true.
So his way of playing didn't actually work. Now, not to say with a few additions that we couldn't make this year and a bit more time, it could have worked. But at the end of the day, we needed someone who could be more pragmatic. I'm not saying Lampard is the best choice, but we certainly did need someone who would adapt to the players that we've got, particularly in the transfer.
Okay. All right.
I'm just laughing.
All right. Let's get on to your lot now, Josh. Maguire's in. Wan-Bissaka's in.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going to be happening in the next couple of days regarding Fernandes or Dybala or whatever.
Or nobody.
It's probably more likely. But how are you feeling generally about your season? So
about the season?
Yeah.
First
of all, is top four on for you?
No.
I think top four is on for anyone.
We're gonna come to bold predictions later, so I'll save that.
Okay.
But I think yeah, we can make top four. But my kind of thing is what I'm thinking is 100%. One of the things that me and G kind of had an argument last season, I really wanted us to sort out a fullback. Like, we needed a fullback. Mm. Like, we had this conversation about the defence. My thing is, the centre-back's not actually the biggest issue. It's the fullback and the defensive mid. Mm. Like, Matic and Young, or whoever was there. It's total rubbish. Mm. So, getting Wan-Bissaka in is, like, one of the signings where I never saw coming. And if anybody who would have asked me, who would I want at right back for this season? I would have said Wan-Bissaka or Alat from Nice. Mm. So, like, I'm like, jobs are good. Mm. Like, good. Harry Maguire, well, you know.
you've taught yourself into kind of accepting it, but you're not happy about it, are you?
I'm not that cheesed up about Harry Maguire, because I think he's an improvement on, especially the way we want to play, he's an improvement over
Smalling and Jones.
Yeah, all of the centre backs we have apart from Lindelof, maybe. I think I rate him similar to Lindelof. Mm. And I think he's probably going to be a good player. Mm. I don't think he's an exceptional centre back. We've paid a world record fee for him. Mm. That's what's irking me. Mm. And then obviously as well, because we could have got him last season and yada, yada, yada. Like, we could have got him before he went Leicester for 30 million. We didn't do it. Right? So the whole saga is just annoyed the hell out of me, but we need to, like, one to get sent back, and we got one, so fair enough. They've addressed some issues in the defense was a big major issue. I've heard that De Gea signed his new contract. Probably gonna hear about that soon, so that's good, kind of. And then but for me, my major concern is in terms of the attack, because I think, like, our defense was bad, but our attack is quite bad too. We're selling Lukaku, we've signed Daniel James, right? That's our addition to attack, right? And then we have Matic still playing defensive mid, who I think was probably one of the worst performers last season in terms of, like, why we have defensive issues. And when I've watched preseason, he's even worse than that. So my thing where I'm at is, well, I think we have a good enough squad to compete for top four. But if certain players are going to be playing, like, if Matic is still going to be playing, Mata's still going to be playing, which is what I've seen from pre-season, or Lingard, then I have no confidence. Mm. Because, you know, like, I'd rather play McTominay over Matic. I'd rather play Angel Gomez over Lingard or Mata, like, or Greenwood. Like, that's where I'm at right now. Like, those senior players are just not good enough.
But for you, top four is... you wouldn't be shocked if you got fourth.
I think we can make top four. I think, like, the style that Ole plays, I understand the way he wants to play. Mm. I think it's going to be a more exciting level of way of playing. I think the defence is going to be a bit more solid, especially with Wan-Bissaka. Mm. I think that we had a pre-season now where everybody's going to be up to a level of fitness to play the pressing game he wants to play. Mm. So in terms of that stuff, like, I think that it's good, because we saw what he could do last season when he implements the style he wants to implement. Mm. The only problem is, when it comes to plan B, we also saw last season when he can't implement the style he wants to implement, what happens? So has he figured out, like, what he's going to do when the first style doesn't work? Yeah. That's the things we have to see. But I think we will win most games, play in most teams, if we play that style as we saw last season.
Yeah, I hear that.
I don't have that issue. It's just the quality of the players.
We'll do Tottenham, City, and Liverpool next week on the pod. We'll just do Arsenal quickly as well. What are your guys' view on Arsenal? How much do you guys see Arsenal as a threat to that fourth spot? You're laughing, but
they bought a very good winger. But they were never that bad at attacking anyway. They're the third highest scorers in the league. You're not going to buy... I can't remember his name now.
Nicolas Pepe.
You're not going to surpass City and Liverpool goals with Nicolas Pepe. Mm. So goals isn't the problem. Mm. You know, goals, you were third. It was the defence, and you haven't done anything. So unless there's going to be a miracle before... I don't really see Arsenal as much more. And the thing is with Arsenal as well, and as Europa League final showed it, the mentality hasn't gone. So you can buy as many talented players as you want, but if you've got to lose the mentality, you're going to lose.
Mm. But do you not think, Josh, a second year under Emery, that maybe he's now getting his chance to imprint his mentality, his way of playing, his way of defending on that team, albeit with the same defenders?
Put it like this, yeah? Last season, like G already pointed out, and I think it's actually the last two seasons, nobody's outscored Arsenal apart from City and Liverpool over the last two seasons of the Premier League, right?
Mm.
In the same last two seasons of the Premier League, Arsenal have conceded 51 goals in both seasons. Mm-hmm. So under Wenger and under Emery, right? So the Emery thing for me last season was, I think he's an all right manager, but your away record was shocking, the same it was under Wenger. And if you guys do not sign defenders in this transfer window, then I have to kind of look at him and think he's a nutter because you signed Nicolas Pepe for 72 million, but your defense is still. But obviously, there's talk about Tierney and there's talk about getting a centre back in. So obviously, if you guys can do that, then I'm looking at Arsenal. I'm thinking, okay, maybe you lot might be able to do a thing this season and compete for top four. But without signing defenders, I don't see it because I don't see how Nicolas Pepe is going to stop you going away to Crystal Palace and not winning or going away on the roads and not winning games. Because for me, the reason why you wasn't able to win games on the road is because you couldn't defend. Mm. It wasn't because you couldn't score goals. So
I hear that. Yeah. All right, let's. I've asked you both to prepare three bold predictions each for the season. Okay, I'm interested to hear. I want three. and it could be something that's on the pitch, off the pitch related, anything to do with football this season.
Now he tells us. All
right. Bold predictions. To start with you, Josh, give me three bold predictions this season.
All three in one go. All right. My first one I came out with was that Sebastian Haller will score more than 15 Premier League goals this season for West Ham.
Okay, that is quite bold.
I think he's a really good signing. I think he might be one of the signings of the season if he accumulates. So I think he will. He's a really good player. I think he might score about 15 plus Premier League goals. The second one was I had two teams out of the traditional top six that I thought wouldn't make top six. I'm going to say Chelsea are not going to make top six.
Two teams out of the...
I have a team in my head that I thought that could also happen too, but I'm not going to say. So I'm just stick with Chelsea and not going to make top six. And the reason why I say that is because I think that one of Leicester and or Everton are going to knock one of the top six out, and I'm going with Chelsea.
But you think there's two teams in the top six that potentially may not make
it? Well, Man United might be a potential to get knocked out, but I'm going to go with Chelsea. Right? So let's go with that.
Wow, okay.
And then the other one, it's not really a bold prediction, but I think it's an obvious one, that Aston Villa are going to be the Fulham of the season.
Really?
Yeah, they've spent over like tons of money.
So,
and I don't really see that they've really improved their team.
I see. I did a show on TalkSport about 3 weeks ago about that, looking at, like, spent a lot of money. Let's look at the actual players they've actually signed and let's look at where this money's gone.
Yeah.
And the Aston Villa fans were getting really angry at the comparison with Fulham. Like, we're not Fulham. It's totally different. We've got our stuff. This was their excuse. We've got our stuff done early. We've got all our buys in early. We know what we wanted. We've addressed key issues. Where I was like, okay, well, we'll see. But they got angry at the accusation from the media that they're doing a Fulham. So I looked for some of their players, and they have signed some decent players. There are some players in that list of players they've signed. Some of the attackers that are on like four. I think I found one of their attackers has got like five goals in like four seasons or something.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't always go just by stats, granted,
but
stats didn't look good.
I don't think it's not the level of the player that concerns me, it's the number of players.
Yeah.
Because I think Tyrone Mings is fine, because Tyrone Mings was with them last season, and it makes sense. But they've just done too much business, in my view, and that's what Fulham did.
Yeah.
I feel like they've done too much, and I don't really see how they're going to...
Like,
starting the season, for me, Fulham starting this season really badly because all of the players needed to
drill.
And I feel like that's going to happen to Villa.
I actually thought that Tom Heaton was arguably the signing of the summer, this summer when that happened. And then I just thought he might be getting peppered so much, they might end his career. Because if they go down and he's conceding 60 goals, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He might actually end up looking really, really, really bad there.
But anyway, that was my prediction.
All right, G, go on.
Yeah, you see that top six one. Obviously, that was kind of my one, but I had
so give me a why.
I look at Man United's midfield, and for me it's a problem, especially if Pogba tries to push for a move in the next couple of days. Not even the next couple of days, because he could technically in the next week or
Pogba's
so.
Pogba's not leaving.
Foreman,
not even.
I don't know. I mean, what's the back spasm? Was he turned his back on you guys?
No, but that's what I'm saying. I have no doubt in my mind he wants to leave. I'm saying the club are not going to send him this season. Facts.
I mean,
it's not going to happen.
Are you that confident in Woodward?
I am. You know.
And in a way, is that almost worse that you might keep him, but against his will?
No.
Okay.
Because have you seen our midfield? Enough said.
It's got a point.
Enough said.
So why do you think that they're more vulnerable? And both same to you. Why do you think Chelsea and United are more vulnerable dropping out than Arsenal?
All right. Let me tell you why I picked Chelsea. Because obviously he's going to... Let me tell you why. Because he gave the whole spiel about Sarri and all of this stuff, right? Mm. The way I see it, Chelsea's squad is weaker than it was last season. They have a manager who is more inexperienced than the manager that they had last season.
Mm.
Everything that they have from last season is a regression. Arsenal are going to improve their team. It might not be all in the right areas, but they're going to improve. Mm. United have improved their squad. It might not be in all the right areas, but they've improved. Liverpool have improved. Liverpool don't need to improve. Mm. City have improved. Spurs have even improved.
Mm.
So every single team in the top six has improved. Chelsea have regressed, in my opinion. Your squad and your manager is a regression for what you had. Then you have Everton, who's improved. Mm. Leicester's, who's improved. So I'm looking at it and thinking, well, everyone's improving. You've gone backwards. I'm expecting you to have a worse season this season than you had last season. Irrespective of what everyone said about Sarri last season, I think it was an up and down season. Mm. I think you played some good football. You played some not so good football.
Maybe the first five or six games.
You played some good football.
Once we got worked out, we didn't play any good football.
But then towards the end of the season, you guys did what you had to do. You won games. You won a trophy. You came third in the league and you won Europa League. Lampard's not topping that.
We came third.
Lampard is not topping that.
He puts a good case forward.
We came third in the league because everyone else faltered. Not because Sarri did well.
I'm saying, if
Lampard had the same situation as Sarri towards the end of the season, he would have got third.
No, because towards the end of the season, you guys were winning your games.
Winning their games, yes.
See, so yes. This is what I'm saying. The guy was getting results when he needed to get results, right? I don't see Lampard doing that.
We lost a lot of games. The other teams just lost more than us.
So why do you think United are more vulnerable than Arsenal?
Because I think they've actually... You say everyone's improved. I don't think United have improved significantly. I think Wan-Bissaka will improve them over time, but I'm not sure whether that he has the instant impact straight away.
I don't think
Hiram Maguire takes the defence to another level. So I think I look at United's team and I look at them towards the end of the season and I saw a sinking ship. And I think if things go badly, they lose the first couple of games, I actually think the ship goes worse.
I think he's delusional now.
I think Ollie will be gone by Christmas. I just don't think he's the guy that gets the job done. But I think that the one ray of light I would have for United in terms of De Gea is he can't have a worse season than the season just gone.
Yeah, but
a lot of goals conceded were for him. And I'm a big De Gea fan.
Yeah, but he also saved them a lot of times as well.
Previous years, but last year...
Last year he saved them a few times
No.
I bat for De Gea, but last year he was bad. So I'm just thinking, if he concedes five less mistakes, that could be another X amount of points. Do you know what I mean?
Let me put this out there. Yeah? As much as I don't like the Harry Maguire signing, right? As much as I hate the signing, actually, in terms of the United defence, one of the areas that we're really weak is aerially, because our goalkeeper doesn't come and claim the ball, and our centre backs, Lindelof, not strong in the air. Jones isn't really particularly strong. Yeah. Harry Maguire is probably one of the best defenders in the Premier League at dealing with the ball aerially. That's just a fact. Mm. I don't like him, but that's a fact. So he addresses that issue. And Wan-Bissaka, I would say, over the past 18 months, I can't think of a better right back in the Premier League.
He doesn't get beat.
In terms of fixing the defensive issue, like, it's not going to elevate the defence to, oh my God, it's the best defence in the league. But where our defence was, like, Ashley Young and Jones, Smalling, Baye, Lindelof versus Wan-Bissaka, Maguire, Lindelof, Shaw, De Gea, not having an off season, that is a significant improvement.
But I don't think your defense is better than Arsenal.
But that's what I said. This is what I'm saying. I never said better than
but
us.
You said it's improved.
Better.
It's improved, but not improved enough. To elevate you past us. That's what I'm saying.
Better than where we were. And remember what I said from you guys. You guys are regressing because not only did you have an absolute rubbish strike force last season, but you had Hazard. Now you have an absolute rubbish strike force and no Hazard. So I don't know.
I personally can't. I can call the other top five teams roughly where I think they'll finish. I can't call Chelsea. Chelsea, I think, could finish fourth. They could finish seventh or eighth as well. I can't put a finger on Chelsea yet.
Seventh.
Give me your other two bold predictions.
So my bold predictions were that Pochettino goes before the end of the season.
Oh, I've heard a little bit of rumours about this. Yeah.
So I'll let you finish. Maybe it's
not that bold, but I'm just looking at...
No, that is bold. I think that's bold.
Yeah, I'm looking at the situation with Zidane. I'm looking at what Pochettino has been saying in the media, and I could... It just seems like there's a collision course.
Yeah. You know what's funny? I'm the opposite. I've got Spurs finishing second.
Oh.
I know the preseason hasn't been all harmonious and it hasn't been the best preseason. You can normally judge a team season by the preseason. If things are a little bit, you know, niggly, that normally is for a reason. So I'm kind of contradicting myself here. But I've been thinking for a while, I think Spurs are going to push Liverpool all the way for second.
The thing is whether they will or not, will that be enough to keep Pochettino happy?
They could both happen. They could finish second, he can still leave. And yeah. Go, yeah, you're right.
But you said you wouldn't end the season, though.
The boldness about it would be before the end of the season.
That's why the reservation.
Or an argument with Levy came.
I heard a couple of things about things not being so rosy there. That's what I say.
Yeah,
but go on.
Okay.
And then the other one was for aside from the Super Cup, and it's kind of like, it's annoying now because you asked the prediction when the Super Cup came up, but I was going to say a female would officiate a big final. To me, the Super Cup isn't a big final. I'm saying FA Cup, FA Cup, Champions League, or maybe even if it was an FA Cup semi-final, for instance, I think a female official will be the bold one would be a big final.
How many
VAR mess ups? not related to the female, but just put that out there because I know some people might be thinking
little segue there. Yeah. on the VAR thing, I was struggling with three bold ones. I've got Spurs finishing second. I think, and this kind of relates more
Spurs finish. Okay, yeah.
And this kind of more finished relates to kind of more next season. I think VAR will be scrapped in the Premier League.
Whoa.
I think they'll scrap it. I think it's going to be an absolute failure. And I think they'll scrap it. Yep.
Wow.
And the other one was, it's not really bold, but there's some big boy strikers in this league. I think Vardy takes top scorer this year.
What?
Yeah. I think Vardy's going to bang goals this year.
Top scorer?
Yeah.
Bold.
That is bold.
I do. Wow. I think Vardy outscores. But Bamiyang, Kane, I think I'm going Vardy.
Wait, even Abraham?
love it. And I've also got a sneaky feeling about Southampton. I like Hasenhüttl. There's something about him. Their squad is really meh. I looked at their squad. There's no one in their squad that's ripping up trees. But I think Hasenhüttl might win a cup
with
Southampton this year. I've got a funny feeling he might do a thing this year.
You know, my outside team is this year is Brighton.
To get where?
To just be good.
Okay.
Like challenge. Okay. Like top. Like lower half, top of the bottom half.
Yeah,
basically.
That's possible.
Yeah,
I think Wolves might go deep as well in the Europa League, like final. I think they'll make it to the final. I think they're going to go for it. I know a lot of teams that kind of at that top six when they get to Europa League, they kind of just mug it off early. I think Wolves are going to go for it. I think they're going to go deep. They're going deep
in Europa.
I think so.
And you think is that going to affect their league?
It probably will, but I think if they finish 13th and get the semi-final of the Europa League, that for them, I think, will be deemed a good season.
How's the squad looking now? Because it seems like not so long ago, they're like 11 players.
It's a little thin. But
who's at Wolves?
Yeah. It's not the deepest, but I think they're going to prioritise that cup. But that's the couple of my bold shouts. Right, and finally, let's just move on to the Fantasy Football League. We're going to kick this off again. There will be a cash prize this year as well. I won't say how much. There's going to be a cash prize.
It's £100 lighter than it would have been.
Oh yeah.
So those that want to join our Fantasy Football League,
Our code is here. Our code is TXJMD2. That's TXJMT2. D2.
George, you're hoping if you say the wrong code, you get the money.
So one man in the league, and I swing it myself. So that's our league. So join our league.
Are you going to give updates when you're not doing well?
Every week, last season, when you weren't doing well. I finished something third. I did well most weeks. I was all right.
Mate, there were a couple of weeks when you were like in the bottom half and you weren't telling us what was going on.
I did a sorry. I pulled it around in the end. I did all right. So join our league and join the fun. Gabriel, Josh, first pod of the season. Thank you very much for coming on this week's pod.
No worries.
We will be back every Monday night / Tuesday morning, depending where in the world you are. Subscribe to the podcast. We are on iTunes. We're on Spotify. We're on everywhere. All the usual outlets. SoundCloud, go check us out there. We're on the socials as well. Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Until next week, peace.